This is Gordon Evans, and I'm speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton. Thank you very much for coming in.
Always.
Let's start with General Motors. You've said that you want your committee, Energy and Commerce, to hold another hearing regarding the
recall.
Could
be actually a couple more hearings. We'll see where it takes us.
What else do you need to find out?
Well, so I left Washington a couple weeks ago. You know, 2 weeks we've been off for Easter break. We go back into session on Monday next week. Last week we received, I want to say, 300,000 pages emails from GM. We're expecting some more from NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, a mouthful for sure, earlier this week. I've not had a chance to talk to my counsels yet who are pouring through that information and the staff. I'll get a report next week. But, you know, we're trying to connect the dots. That's what this is all about. I mean, what did they submit to NHTSA? Why didn't NHTSA take what they submitted and ask for a recall? I mean, what was the information? Who dropped the ball where? And then when we get those answers, and we know, of course, that last week GM suspended two of their engineers, and as the CEO, Mary Barra, told me earlier this month, said it's engineering 101 that when you change a part, you change the serial number because that part is, it's no longer has the same function. And I can remember when I, summer job, I'd made disc brakes for Bendix, and I made, the black parts that were there, pulled them out of the press, and, they all had a serial number on them. And, if the mold changed or something else, bingo, so did the number. That didn't happen with these ignition switches, which makes it certainly more difficult to figure out which ones are defective or not. As she told me, it's engineering 101 to do that. Didn't happen. So who made that decision? Well, where is the documentation along the lines? We have some suspicions, but we want to get the answers. And, at the end of the day, we are likely certainly to have another hearing, maybe more than that, to bring people before us. We're going to be interviewing a number of different witnesses, both at NHTSA as well as GM, to try and figure this thing out. And then once we get all the evidence in, and it's going to take a little while yet for sure, then we'll figure out whether or not we actually have to revise or reform the TREAD Act, a bill that I wrote a number of years ago as it related to the Ford Firestone issue, to make sure that, there is a communication of safety information back and forth between the companies and the overseers, in this case NHTSA. Do we need to strengthen the fines? We did add criminal violations for malfeasance in the TREAD Act. We'll get a sense of where things are and obviously talk to my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. This has been a bipartisan effort from the get-go.
Do you think there needs to be another look at the whole idea of being able to perhaps shield GM from liability for the time that they were in bankruptcy? Or the time before they were in bankruptcy, that if it goes back that far.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Of course, GM, and some would say that they were lawyered up when they came and testified before us, and that were anxious. I mean, she did. The CEO did tell me that they were going to be cooperative. She did say that they were going to give us their report, their own internal report, when it was done. I expect that to happen within the next couple of weeks. There are real questions about, this was the old GM, the new GM. Are they immune from this? I just have to say is they want to be a good, I think, they for sure want to be a good corporate citizen, looking out for the people that purchased their cars and act in a responsible way. And 12, 13 deaths, some in our district. Number of accidents elsewhere around the country, airbag instances too, which is part of this investigation that we're doing. I would like to think that they would want to make sure that people that were injured because of the problems their engineering caught and their real issues here, that they would want to make sure that the folks that were injured are properly satisfied with the approach to their injuries, financial or otherwise, and not, though they, I guess you could say, technically are shielded, that they would want to make some type of settlement. And, we're not privy. There have been a number of accidents that went to court. Private decisions were made. Those documents have been sealed. So I don't know They've not shared with us anyway, publicly or not publicly, what the agreements on those settlements were. But I'd like to think that they, as a corporate citizen, would want to reach out and help the people that were injured in a financial way.
Whether or not Mary Barra comes back to testify before your committee, do you think GM as a whole needs to be more forthcoming?
They sure better be. They clearly have learned a lesson. I mean, we saw the earnings reports come out earlier this week. I want to say 85% reduction in terms of their profits. She, to her credit, announced the new vice, in essence, a vice president in charge of safety. But people are going to want to see it work. And, you know, it's too early to tell.
I want to ask you about the Allied Paper landfill. There was a meeting here in Kalamazoo this week at which an EPA official kind of moved the can down the road a little bit. They'd been talking about having a plan by this summer, and now they're saying end of the calendar year. Does that concern you?
I think the thing that I think is the positive out of this, and my staff were there, is that it does appear as though they're listening to us, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, politically, both senators, Stabenow and Levin, have joined with me on literally every step of the way to try and put pressure on EPA. We had Gina McCarthy, the administrator of EPA, testify before us, before my committee, a couple weeks ago. I talked to her in private before that. That was part of my question that I asked her formally, that she work with us, with the city, with the county, with all of the parties to make sure that this thing is resolved in the right form. The announcement this week, in essence, they're going to take a little bit more time. Frankly, I think it can be a good thing because it shows that, in fact, that they're listening. They're not at this point, and our fear was, particularly a few months ago, was that they would impose their settlement and do it in the cheapest way, which would have allowed it all to stay there for, you know, let's face it, forever, and keep that land from development, from all the different things that we don't want to see happen. And so I think this can be a positive step if that time is used in an appropriate way. I certainly I've talked to Bobby Hopewell, the mayor, and a number of members of the city council and county commission as well. They're all big concerns about it. We'll continue to work on this, and hopefully at the end of the day, now, you know, at the end of the year, maybe beginning of next year, we'll have a resolution that all of us can support and work together on.
State Representative Sean McCann expressed some disappointment with this and said it almost felt like the EPA was trying to wear the community down.
Hey, this issue is not going away. You know, if we have prevented them from doing what they initially said, I think that's a good thing. And it appears as though maybe it was a direction from Washington to the Chicago office. I mean, I got to say, when we had this other issue up in Plainwell, literally in Allegan County, it was Washington that overturned what Chicago wanted to do. And that was primarily because of a visit that the then administrator made here to Kalamazoo with me. We went all over it. We spent many hours together, I mean more than a day. And he, in essence, took his finger out and told in a nice way, and not that one finger, but the next finger, and told the Chicago administrator that, you know what, Fred's right. This stuff needs to go. It doesn't need – remember, it was going to come to Kalamazoo. That's where they wanted to move it. And instead, it went other side of the state, and we got it out of here. I'd like to think that because of the discussions that not only I've had, but certainly our two senators as well, that Washington is listening, and they're going to make sure that this isn't done on the cheap, and that, in fact, the views of Kalamazoo are heard and responded to, and that's what I'm going to continue to push for.
President Obama signed legislation which is related to the funding of pediatric research called the Gabriella Miller Act. This came through your committee. Explain what it's going to do.
This is really good legislation. So this little girl, and I would urge folks, if they want, to go on YouTube and look up Gabriella Miller on YouTube, and you'll see a number of stories that local – she's from formerly from Northern Virginia. Tragically, she did die late last year. I want to say October, November. But she issued a challenge to Congress. She had a brain disorder, brain tumors, about the size of a walnut. And so her mission was she actually smashed walnuts, and she raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for brain cancer. And she at some rallies, she said, you know, Congress needs to do its job. Why don't we have pediatric research at the National Institute of Health and other institutions to try and solve the diseases like I have? And it was a wonderful message. I mean, this is a 8, 9, 10-year-old little girl. And we passed it. And we have a rule in the House that says when you have a new program, you got to figure out a way to pay for it. So our pay for was we're going to take the subsidy away for both the Republican and the Democratic national conventions. It's about $12 million, and it's not peanuts. And we're going to say enough. those conventions, you're going to pay for them yourself.
The political parties,
you're going to pay for them yourself. You're not going to get that taxpayer subsidy. And instead, we're going to divert that money to really solving some of these diseases. And tragically, she didn't get to live to see this happen. I actually led the fight on the House floor, and it was a fight. There were some that didn't want to do it, and she maybe crossed the line a little bit in thumbing her nose at certain members of Congress.
Colorful language here.
Yeah, she did. She did. They had to bleep it, actually, and that was something from a little 10-year-old girl. But we got it done. I led the debate on the House floor. Leadership asked me to do it because I could reach across and get a number of Democrats. We got it done. It was co-sponsored by Peter Welch, a fine Democrat from the state of Vermont who's on our committee. And at the end, we got both senators from Northern Virginia – or actually from Virginia, but they happen to be from Northern Virginia to sponsor it in the Senate. They passed it without a dissent. And the president, to his credit, signed it earlier this month into law. So it's going to happen. It's great news.
What some Democrats have said in response, though, is all well and good, but we've cut a lot from NIH, National Institutes of Health, in sequester. I guess it raises the question, of course, yeah, you got to cut spending, but is there setting priorities, and are things like health research a little more important than maybe some other items in the budget?
Well, health research is very important. And, of course, when we did the sequester, remember, that was the president's idea from a couple years ago. And that impacted almost everything with a few exceptions, veterans, food stamps, a few things like that. But it was across the board that now we passed a budget agreement, a two-year budget agreement that passed, that I supported, passed 3-1 last December. It was implemented in the continuing resolution, passed 6-1 in the House. Again, I supported that, obviously bipartisan when you look at those margins. We are now beginning to debate what the level of funding should be for the NIH. National Institute of Health. I will continue to support an increase in that. I helped lead the bipartisan effort with Henry Waxman back in the 90s to double the money for the NIH, and I feel pretty good. I mean, the committee hasn't worked. The Appropriations Committee haven't done their work yet. But this is an area that I'm going to continue to push forward. And actually, something that's very exciting. And I can talk a little bit about it. I just signed off on an editorial today that's going to run in the Wall Street Journal probably next week, is we're going to embark on a major effort in our committee, bipartisan effort, for faster cures. We're going to be doing a lot of listening between now and the end of the year and beginning of next year, not only with our research institutions, U of M, MIT, you name them, Stanford, et cetera. The NIH will be part of that, the CDC, the FDA, pharma. I sat down for about an hour 2 weeks ago now with the chairman of Pfizer, and he's going to be the new head of pharma. This is a rotating spot, obviously an impact here in the district. Biotech industries, all of the disease patient groups that are out there as well, to see what can we do in a bipartisan way in Congress to try and pass legislation to not only streamline the process, but create the jobs and find the cures for all of these things. Very much like what we did with the Gabriel Miller on a much smaller scale pediatric bill that the president signed. We already have the buy-in from the number two leaders in both the Republican and Democratic Party, Steny Hoyer, Eric Cantor. They're on board. They're going to participate in our formal kickoff of this the first week in May. And Diana DeGette is the lead Democrat. She's one of the ranking members, subcommittee members on our committee. And I've made this known that this is going to be a big priority for us. We're going to do a lot of listening. And sat down earlier this month with the head of the NIH. He's very excited, Francis Collins, very excited about the approach that we're going to be taking and what we can do to really solve, you know, the mysteries of these things that plague, you know, every family across the country. And you name the group, from cancer to diabetes to Alzheimer's to MS. This will be a major advancement for us, and I'm excited about the challenge.
Since the last time you were here, two of your colleagues from Michigan in the House, Republicans, have decided not to run for reelection. Dave Camp and Mike Rogers are certainly young enough that they could stay in the House a good while longer, and they're both committee chairmen, which is something that, much like yourself, people work their way up to. Is this a sign that Congress is becoming a more difficult place to get meaningful things done?
Well, yeah, I got to say, well, it's always, let's face it, it's always tough. And it's probably tougher today than it ever has been before for a variety of reasons. Dave Camp and Mike Rogers have been exceptional public servants for our state. Done a terrific job. Reputation of being bipartisan. Mike Rogers, he experienced, like me, firsthand 9/11, really, for, you know, not having another major terrorist attack here is a credit to what he's done and working again across the aisle. And it surprised a lot of us. Many of us, you know, he would have been chairman again next year. This is an appointment by the Speaker. Speaker has sole discretion, doesn't go through the normal steering committee process. And he would have done it. Surprised a lot of us, and for a number of reasons, he decided not to run again. And I got to tell you, I was deeply disappointed. He's one of my best friends.
He's leaving to host a talk show,
and he wants your job. He wants.
But he says it's an opportunity to talk more about the things he cares about. Isn't being a member of Congress an opportunity to talk and act on things that you care
well,
about?
Well, it is, and. But, you know, there's, you know, and I'm not playing a violin here, but there's a lot of sacrifices. His first election, he won by something like 111 votes. The district's a little safer. Redistricting has happened. But he was, you know, everyone knew he was in good shape to win reelection. But, you know, there's a lot of travel. You know, you're gone. He has a wonderful wife, Christy, a son in high school. I mean, it's comes with the territory that you are gone from your family at least half the time. I'm not playing my violin. It's part of the job description that comes with it. He's made a great mark. He wants to speak out on a whole number of issues. He had an opportunity that he couldn't turn down. He got to know the chairman of Cumulus, and so it'll be a national broadcasting thing. They're actually going to build a studio in Washington for him. There's not to say that he won't be back in public service. I got to think that if a Republican wins the presidency in 2016, he'll be on a short list for a variety of different jobs there. Even President Obama considered him, I believe, for the FBI spot when that opened up, all on the merits. He's a former FBI agent, very smart guy, very engaging. And we will miss him. Same thing with Dave Camp. Again, reputation for being bipartisan, safe district. The two of us are two peas in a pod, former staffers for our boss. His boss was Bill Schuette when he was in the Congress before he became attorney general and, you know, secretary of agriculture in Michigan. Number of things. Again, a safe district. But three kids. One's going to be a sophomore now at the University of Michigan. Two are in high school. Travel back and forth every week after 20 some years it gets a little tiring, and so he's looking for a different future. And you know, again, he'll remain a very close friend, and he's not out of politics.
Dave Camp has been chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. That is one of the committees which has term limits. And Dave Camp,
well, they actually all do.
Intelligence
for us
does.
Well, yeah, that does actually. You can get a waiver now. Remember, all right. So this is a little inside baseball. So the speaker makes the appointment, but you can get a waiver. So Paul Ryan, you know, again, this is his seventh. He's finishing up his eighth year now as the top Republican on the Budget Committee. He got a waiver to continue that. I want to say intelligence may have 8 years instead of six, but again, you can get a waiver from the speaker or the committee. But anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt your question.
All right, let's make sure we clarify that. If Dave Camp were reelected in November, as most people expect he would have been had he run, he would not have been able to have been chairman of the Ways and Means Committee again in the next Congress.
Without a waiver, which is probably unlikely. It's even Henry Hyde, who was, again, very revered, both sides of the aisle, smart, chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He asked for a waiver to be chairman, continue to be chairman of Judiciary, didn't get it.
Some people don't.
They're pretty hard to get.
And some people.
Paul Ryan was a special case because, of course, he had been on the ticket with Mitt Romney.
Some people have raised the question of whether these are still a good idea to have these limits on committee chairmanships. As someone who is currently a committee chairman, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, listen to my voice go up. No. Well, they came about in the 90s. Actually, Newt Gingrich, and this was a rules change within our own conference. So each, you know, Democrats have differently than the Republicans. The first thing that Newt did, as part of this rules change was to remove the – it used to be just – this. These were done just on seniority. So if you got elected enough times, eventually you'd be at that spot where you'd be chair. That no longer is the case on the Republican side of things, and really not for the Democrats either. Otherwise, remember John Dingell got bounced
by Henry Waxman
when the Democrats were in charge. So – if that had been in the case, I would not be chairman of Energy and Commerce. Dave Camp would not have been chairman of Ways and Means. There are other people who had been there longer who would have had that because, you know, so he got rid of that. But when he did that, he also, again, this was the conference itself, changed the rules to impose a 6-year term limits. I expect that that'll stay. No one's really arguing that that's gonna change when we do our rules package after the election in November. And of course, the new members will be there. But there's frankly, if you actually look at all the committees, I don't know how many. There's 12, 13 different committees: Small Business, Ag, Judiciary, Energy and Commerce, Appropriations, etc. For the most part, folks that are former chairmen, they're still there. So the former chairman of Natural Resources, Don Young, I mean, he's still in the Congress. Former chairman of the Agriculture Committee, Bob Goodlatte, he's still there. I mean, Ralph Hall, former chairman of the Science Committee, he's still there. So John Micah, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, John Micah, former chairman of Transportation Committee, he's still there, still on the transportation. So it's you can make a decision. I mean, people make decisions every 2 years. So Joe Barton, former chairman of Energy and Commerce, he's still on my committee. So, it's not at all a hard and fast thing that you leave if you're no longer chair.
All right. Let me ask you to respond to the rhetorical flourish that was on the Huffington Post when Dave Camp decided to retire. And a pretty favorable article about him saying, is there even much of a point to being a member of Congress anymore if you're nominally committed to public service? And they answer, probably not. And they say Dave Camp's retirement shows that.
Well, you know, Dave Camp was elected in 1992, 22 years in the House. He was a state rep before that for one term, and he worked as the chief of staff before that. I would say by any standard, he has set the stage. He's a lawyer. He's a dad. By any standard, I think people would say that he has been an outstanding public servant that has given up quite a bit. I mean, these are not 40-hour jobs. Again, I'm not playing my violin here. But he's given up quite a lot for his public life of doing really an outstanding job for not only our state, but certainly his district and the nation, too.
Is tax reform likely to go anywhere now that Dave Camp's basically a lame duck?
Well, not this year, and I can use the word bitterly disappointed that it's not coming. He put out a proposal. I put out a very supportive statement for it. No, it's not perfect. Nothing is because it doesn't have the name Upton on it, right? I'm smiling. We need tax reform. You know, when I was with Mike Gendernoy, he's the chairman of Perigo here a month or two ago here in Kalamazoo, he was lamenting having to go to Ireland for his board meeting because they're now headquartered in Ireland and only headquartered really because we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And they 35%, it's 10.5% there. We need tax reform. Man, it's complicated, that is for sure. We can make a lot of good steps that I think, again, would be bipartisan. But when you saw Max Baucus, former chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, surprise people too when he left in December. He's now the U.S. ambassador to China. That relationship with Dave Camp, in working together, Republican, Democrat, House and Senate, really was a bad sign that we would get tax reform done in this Congress. And it's not going to happen now, between now and the end of the year. It's now being viewed as a good discussion draft, what Dave Camp put out, a lot of principles. I expect that the next chairman of the Ways and Means Committee will be Paul Ryan. There are a couple of people that are running for it, but within our caucus, but I think that Paul Ryan will be the chair. He has said publicly on the record that he looks at Dave Camp's as a first step towards tax reform. This will be a major agenda for him to pursue in the next Congress, and it needs to happen, and I think he certainly has the talent to get it done.
West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton, as always, thank you for your time.
You bet.